Jayate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 5, verses 26 through 29. And 29 is on the board. Visheshastu Vikorvanad Ambaso Gandavanabhut Paranya Paranvayad Rasasparsa Sabda Rupa Gunanvitaha. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Listen up very closely, because to understand this purport is very translation is very difficult. Because the sky is transformed, the air is generated within the quality of touch. And by previous succession, the air is also full of sound and the basic principle of duration of life, sense perception, mental power, and bodily strength. So I'll read that again. Because the sound is transformed, the air is generated with the quality of touch. So sky is transformed, air is generated, and touch is manifested. And by previous succession, the air is also full of sound and the basic principles of the duration of life. So air contains sound and the basic principles of duration of life, which is sense perception, mental power, and bodily strength. When the air is transformed in course of time and nature's course, fire is generated, taking the shape with the sense of touch and sound. So from air, fire comes, and then fire as added element, touch comes in. Since fire is also transformed, there is a manifestation of water, full of juice and taste. So from fire, then water comes, and then taste comes from water. As previously, it also has form and touch, and is also full of sound. So water also has form and touch, and also contains the element of sound. And water, being transformed from all variegatedness on earth, appears odorous, and, as previously, becomes qualitatively full of juice, touch, sound, form, respectively. So, you might say, well, I'm not a science student, so what's the use of all this stuff? It's in the Bhagavatam, so it has some value. It's very technical, very detailed, and we should try to understand. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The whole process of creation is an act of gradual evolution and development from one element to another, reaching up to the variegatedness of the earth, as so many trees, plants, mountains, reptiles, rivers, birds, animals, and varieties of human beings. The quality of sense perception is also evolutionary, generated namely from sound, then touch, and from touch to form. Taste and odor are also generated along with the gradual development of sky, air, fire, water, and earth. They are all mutually the cause and effect of one another, but the original cause is the Lord Himself in His plenary portion as Mahavishnu, lying in the causal border of the Mahatattva. As such, Lord Krishna is described in the Brahma Samhita as the cause of all causes, and is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 10.8 as follows. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matat sarvam prabhartante iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhavan samanvitaha. The qualities of sense perception are fully represented in the earth, and they are manifested in other elements to a lesser extent. So sense perception is found in the earth and also in other elements. In the sky there is also sound. There is sound, where in the air there are sound and touch. In fire there are sound, touch, and shape. In the water there is also taste, along with the other perceptions, namely sound, touch, and shape. In the earth, however, there are all the above-mentioned qualities with an extra development of odor. Therefore, on the earth there is a full display of variegatedness of life, which originally started with the basic principle of air. Diseases of the body take place due to the arrangement of air within the earthly body of the living being. Mental diseases result from special derangement of the air within the body, and as such, yogic exercise is especially beneficial to keep the air in order so that the diseases of the body become almost nil by such service. Prabhupada here gives a little plug for yoga, bodily gymnastics, asanas. It's good for health. When they are properly done, the duration of life also increases, and one can have control over death also by such practices. The yogis can do that. By controlling the airs in the body, they can extend their life for many, many years. A perfect yogi can have command over death and quit the body at the right moment, when he is competent to transfer himself to a suitable planet. The bhakti yoga, however, surpasses all the yogis because by dint of his devotional service, he is promoted to the region beyond the material sky and is placed in one of the planets of the spiritual sky by the supreme will of the Lord, the controller of everything. End of purport. Om Agyan Timirandasya Kinajana Salakaya. Very technical, but very interesting. Why are we studying all this? Why don't we just read the 10th canto about Krishna's Leela in Vrindavan? Get right to the essence. Why just figure out how air moves and sound moves and taste is generated, so many things? Why just go to the 10th canto and hear about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, right, with the gopis? Prabhupada said, before you can understand the 10th canto, you have to understand the other 9. You can't understand, you know, how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is performing his intimate leela with his residence in Vrindavan, unless you have a working understanding of the knowledge of Bhagavatam and the basic principles of creation, how that same Supreme Personality of Godhead is the source of creation. Because otherwise, it just looks like some, you know, some very wonderful activities that are performed by God, but actually they're not much different than what we do. And what is that called? That is called mistaking gold for iron, really. Because one cannot understand the higher leelas unless one can go first through the 9 cantos very carefully. This is Prabhupada's statement about this. So we study these things to understand just how great Krishna is. And we get a little bit of understanding of his greatness and how this material energy works. Because if you don't know how the material energy works, you can't get out of it. You can get out, you say, well, we just perform devotional service and Krishna says, I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death, and he just picks you up. Yes, that's good, and that is also correct. But we have to understand that this material energy is not easy to get out of, in the sense that one can very easily become trapped by this material energy. So therefore, there's a very detailed explanation of not only the nature of the material energy, but how the Lord is so intricately connected to all aspects of his creation. And that same Supreme Personality of Godhead is a sweet little cowherd boy in Vrindavan. But he manifests as this giant universal, his giant form as Mahavishnu in order to facilitate this creation of the material energy in such detail, in such understanding, that it just baffles the mind, even of the greatest scientists, because they're trying to figure out how creation goes, and they simply use various speculative and empirical methods, such as telescopes, microscopes, hypotheses and studies and perceptions and various aspects of the mental realm and the intellectual realm. And actually, they never come even close to understanding how things are happening. They can see some kind of external activity, but they can't understand how it's working or why it's working in the way it's working. That's their, we say, poor fund of knowledge, because they don't approach the study in the proper way. So Bhagavatam is giving these very powerful and very detailed aspects of this explains how, this is also important, how intricately the living entity is controlled. People in general think, I'm free. But actually you're not. You're never free. You're always controlled. And not only you're controlled, but you're tightly controlled. Where the living entity is either controlled by the material energy or by the spiritual energy. But control is always there. And under the influence of the material energy, one is always baffled. And so, therefore, to understand a little bit of how this material energy works and understands how that works under the direction of the Supreme Controller, who is actually making everything happen. Some people say, well, God created everything, but then he just took a break. He's on vacation. And everything is just working, they use the example, you make a watch, the man makes the watch and it runs, and then he sells the watch and he's no longer connected to the watch, right? And then the watch works accordingly. But a little thing like a watch, yes, but a huge, giant creation like this material energy, and we see how everything is working so precisely and so intricately, and everything is coming according to a certain pattern that has been destined by the plan maker, that it is impossible to conclude that not everything is working automatically. It's working with such detail and with such precision, and at the same time, the Lord is not in touch with it. Isn't that amazing? He's in touch with it through his various energies. His energies do everything. Parashya sakta vidahaya suyate swabhavika gyabala kriyacha. All of Krishna's energies are perfectly working in correct connection with the Supreme Personality of God, and everything is working according to his desire and according to his will. Here, what's the important principle that has been mentioned here? Well, it's a very intricate understanding, but also we can see that what is the basic principle of creation that's being made? What is the foremost of all the elements of creation? What did you speak of yesterday? Sound. Sound is the force that creates, right? And sometimes the Christians say, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God. Sound. Sound. So sound is the basic principle of creation. Everything comes from sound. But how does everything destroyed? Everything is also destroyed by sound. Sound is the creator and sound is the destroyer. Just like what does Shiva do when he wants to destroy? He plays on his din-din drum and dances. Dance is the dance of Pralaya. Now that Pralaya dance is done in such a way that he has a kirtan. He's chanting and dancing. And he's playing on his drum. And gradually the manifestation of creation is being destroyed by the will or by the facility coming from the power of Lord Shiva. He is in charge of the mode of ignorance. He's in charge of destruction. So sound creates and sound destroys. But there's another element that sound actually, spiritual sound, destroys material creation and creates spiritual creation. Spiritual sound destroys material creation and creates spiritual creation. In other words, through spiritual sound vibrations, material energy is destroyed. or material consciousness, which is a subtle part of the material energy, is destroyed. So sound, when it's when it's performed like such as kirtan, right, just like last night you had a kirtan downtown, was it? Was it downtown? And what happened? You know, all of a sudden it cuts through in the facility of the material energy. And when you're in the kirtan, you're pretty much oblivious, or not oblivious, you're pretty much protected from the material sound vibration. And others are pulled into it, and they also get involved, spiritual sound vibration. So by chanting the holy names of the Lord, we purify our consciousness and actually create what is called a spiritual consciousness through what is called Sabda Brahman. Sabda Brahman, sound, spiritual sound vibration, actually transforms not only our consciousness, but everything material. So sound is so powerful, and that spiritual sound vibration is so powerful that it actually can destroy anything material. So if we want to destroy the material energy, or we want to destroy our effectiveness, our victimization by the material energy, then we chant the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So the chanting of the holy names of the Lord actually purifies the consciousness and awakens within it a relationship with the Supreme. Because actually sound also has form within it. If you could see the Akash, you can't see the Akash. You can't see ether. But in ether there is forms. Forms exist within ether. And when the sound vibration of an area is material, it creates materialistic forms within the ether. And therefore the atmosphere becomes what is called polluted. Polluted. But when there is spiritual consciousness, then, what do we say, the forms that are created, or the spiritual sound, the forms that are created are spiritual. So the chanting of the holy name of Krishna reveals his spiritual form and places within the atmosphere the form of the Lord. So when we're bringing actually Krishna in his transcendental form into our consciousness and into the atmosphere through the chanting of the holy names of the Lord, we're actually bringing Krishna personally in his transcendental form. And it's destroying and removing from the atmosphere material forms like that. So sound is very powerful. Here Prabhupada talks about the different elements, and he also talks about air. That the derangement of air within the body causes diseases. Mental diseases, also physical diseases also. So pranayama are used to that, and also asana helps to realign the airs within the body and give some health. Prabhupada says we don't practice, yoga in order to get self-realization. We can't do yoga exercises. We can't simply, do all these pranayama and expect to get self-realization. But they assist one in keeping good health, which allows one to practice devotional service. And Srila Prabhupada says health is foremost. One should keep good health. Prabhupada writes in one letter that health is first. If your health is kept nice, then you can also perform your service nicely. You can also perform your sadhana nicely. So one should practice and keep oneself good health. How do we keep good health? There's principles, spiritual principles of hygiene. What are the three things that cause disease? Prabhupada said three things cause disease. Does anybody know what those three things are? Huh? I can't hear you? Well, imbalance of the airs cause disease, or balance in the doshas. But according to Prabhupada's statements, Prabhupada said three things. Devotees get sick because of three things. Uncleanliness, that's one. So cleanliness is a high principle, both internal and external. Everything should be very clean, spotlessly clean, revolutionary clean. We have our Murari Chaitanya. When he sees dirt, he just freaks out. He goes into this state of wanting to destroy anything around him when he sees dirt. He becomes very upset. And Prabhupada says, when the mode of goodness comes in contact with the mode of ignorance, there is a reaction. And if you see dirt and you don't become upset, that means you're in the mode of ignorance. One who's in the mode of goodness, when they see dirt, they become upset. Problems are just like when you mix fire and water, there's a reaction. Because it's two opposite elements. So the mode of goodness is cleanliness, the mode of ignorance is dirt or filth. So whenever we see dirt, we should become upset. Or we should do something to clean it up, either one. Or arrange to have it cleaned. Something. So cleanliness is one of the causes of diseases, causes of sicknesses. I was just recently in one temple out in the Midwest, and there's one man out there. He has this, he won't touch anything. He keeps his hands like this. He's a devotee. He's afraid of touching anything because he doesn't want to get his hands dirty. He works with food. He works in the kitchen. So he's very hygienic, very clean. But the point is that one should be very clean, external and internal. What is the principle of cleanliness for external? One should take bath regularly, change cloth regularly, and also, take bath regularly. It's in the scriptures say that one should take bath twice a day. Of course, in the cold weather, it's a little hard, but the scriptures say human beings take baths twice a day. I remember when I first was growing up in America, we used to have a bath every Saturday night. It was only on Saturday night that we had bath, once a week. And the water used to get really dirty. So that's not really, that's muchi, that is malaitya. Cleanliness is very high standard. It's a principle of Brahminical life. One who is Brahminical is clean. Sometimes we go in the bathroom and people cut their hair and they leave the sink dirty. They blow their nose on the walls and they pass urine on the floors. You know, it's just really sloppy. It's more like, you know, the mode of, not ignorance, but it's, you know, even people in the mode of ignorance don't do that. So keep everything clean. If you make something dirty, clean it up. In India, I know everything is dirty anyway, so when you're in, so so nobody cares anyway. But this is not temple life. Temple life means it's very suci, very clean. And what is the, also cleaning, cleanliness also means chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, keeping one's consciousness clean through the heart, through the chanting of the holy names. What is that cleanliness? Then all, what do we say, inauspicious things within the heart are gradually removed. What is those things? Lust, anger, greed, illusion, pride, and envy. So we have to keep the mind cleaned and the heart clean through the process of chanting. So what is the other cause of disease? First one is uncleanliness. Overeating, too much eating, brings one down to the modes of passion and ignorance and causes the body to have to work very hard for digestion. So one should be careful to take what is necessary. What's the third one? What's the other cause of disease? Who knows? Anxiety. Prabhupada said anxiety. Anxiety causes also disease. material anxiety, being anxious for something material. So these three things, anxiety, uncleanliness, and overeating, are the cause of disease. So one should be very aware and avoid these things. We're never in anxiety, we're in anxiety. There is spiritual anxiety. Spiritual anxiety is that we want to see Krishna serve nicely, and therefore we always are thinking, how can I serve better? How can I preach in such a way that people can respond favorably or take it up? In other words, the anxiety of spreading Krishna consciousness, the anxiety of seeing Krishna happy, that is spiritual anxiety. And Prabhupada said that increases one's spiritual activity, whereas material anxiety decreases one's activity. So if you're in anxiety and your service is increasing, it's good. If you're in anxiety and your service is decreasing, then you have to see that it's actually not, it's actually material like that. So this air or sound, sound is the manifestation of ether, and then air is the manifestation of touch. Fire has shape, water has taste, and earth has touch. Odor. So within all the previous or the following elements, the preceding speeding qualities are also there. So in earth, all of the qualities are there. All of the qualities are there. So these are the senses and the sense objects, and the manifestation of the qualities of the energies of the material energy, the qualities such as sound, form, you know, like that. So this is very important to understand, but the most important thing is sound. Producing Krishna conscious sound vibrations which destroy material consciousness. Therefore, Prabhupada says that one should remember Krishna throughout the day by chanting the holy names. If we're always chanting Krishna's name, then we're in that spiritual sound vibration. And just like we come in the morning for Mangal Arati. And Mangal Arati is so nice. This morning I was... Did you see the deities this morning? Did you see how Krishna was dressed? Radharani? No, I mean Mangal Arati. Mangal Arati. If you missed Mangal Arati this morning, you missed, you know, a major event in your life. Krishna was dressed with this turban, and Radharani was dressed with this shawl that was so attractive and so nice. I was told Ishana, he's very creative in making Krishna look very more. So we appreciate that, because Krishna likes to dress nice for the gopis, and the gopis like to dress nice for Krishna. So this is transcendental, what we say, pleasure. So this morning I was just marveling at how wonderful Krishna is. So we should try to come to the Mangal Arati and see Krishna, because if you don't, then you're missing out on something very wonderful. We should not meditate on the inside of our eyelids and think that is the highest form of meditation. Meditation on the inside of the eyelids means sleep. The beautiful form of the Lord appears simply for the pleasure of his devotees. And the devotees find great happiness simply in seeing the Lord in his various manifestations of his qualities. This is the perfection of vision. A beautiful story of Ramanujacharya. There was one king, his name was Kolatunga. This king, he He hated Vaishnavas, and he was a Shivite. And he wanted to make everyone in his kingdom Shivites. So he said, now I will make a declaration. We will make everyone followers of Lord Shiva. And then his minister, his name Chattagram, his minister said, yes, but you will have a hard time because there is Ramanujacharya, and he's a very powerful teacher, and he's teaching about worship of Vishnu. So unless you stop Ramanujacharya, you will not be successful. Akolatunga said, ah, we will call him to our court for debate. So it was arranged. And if we defeat him, then he will have to surrender to Shiva. So they sent out word and to find Ramanujacharya. But then Koresh was the dutiful disciple of Ramanujacharya. Wonderful devotee, Koresh. Amazing personality. He understood that this king was very evil and was going to harm Ramanujacharya. So what he did is he changed cloth with his spiritual master. He was a grihastha. He put on the saffron clothes of Ramanujacharya, and Ramanujacharya put on the grihastha clothes of Koresh. At first, Ramanujacharya didn't want to do it, but Koresh said, no, let me go in your place, my dear Guru Maharaj, because this king is very evil. He will harm you. So it was arranged. Ramanujacharya took on white and left. And Koresh came in the place of Ramanujacharya along with Nath Muni. They both came. Nath Muni was quite old. And they had a debate with the court pundits of Kolatunga. And Kolatunga's pundits were smashed to pieces. Koresh, although he's a disciple of Ramanujacharya, was still able to preach on behalf of his Guru Maharaj. This is a real disciple. A disciple means that we should be able to represent our spiritual master like that. The quality of our devotion to our spiritual master means how much we imbibe his teachings and practice his teachings and be able to speak those teachings to others when necessary. So, Kolatunga was so angry, he said, we should kill them immediately. But then he remembered that he had his daughter many years ago was haunted by a ghost. So he said, Ramanujacharya, because you saved my daughter from a ghost many years ago, I'm not going to kill you, but we will torture you and pluck out your eyes. So they did that. They took Koresh and Nath Muni, and they tortured them in various ways and plucked out their eyes. And then they were blind. And, you know, Koresh, while this was happening, he was actually thanking the torturers that, thank you very much for giving me a chance to serve my spiritual master in this way. He was so happy that he actually offered obeisances to the torturers. Amazing. You can't figure this kind of devotion out. It's beyond our ability to understand. But he was genuine. He was genuine. And he wanted to serve his spiritual master in the best way he could. So he felt like giving his life for his spiritual master was the greatest joy of his life. So when he was tortured, he was thanking the torturers. You're actually giving me a chance to serve my spiritual. And they were so overwhelmed by his humility and devotion that they felt sorry for him after. And they gave him and Nath Muni some money and put them in charge of some other people and led them back to where Ramanujacharya was, back to their ashram. When Koresh came back, of course, Nath Muni never made it back because he was so old and he died on the way. Actually, he personally gave up his body. He decided to leave the world. That's another story. But then Koresh had no eyes. And then Ramanujacharya said, You know, Goresh, you know, I think you should go to Ranganath and you should ask for your eyes back. This is my instruction for you. Ranganath Deity. This is the deity worshipped by both Goresh and by Ramanujacharya. So Goresh didn't want to do it, but Ramanujacharya said, you must. So he went and sat in front of Ranganath, and Ranganath spoke to him after one. He said, Goresh, you've come? He said, yes, my lord. You've come to ask me something? Yes, what is that? Can you somehow or other give liberation to the king Kolatunga? The one who created his torture. Ranganath said, I have put him in demoniac species of life, birth after birth. You want me to liberate him? Yes, I want you to liberate him. All right, he'll get liberation. Take him back to Vaikuntha. So Goresh petitioned the Lord, and the Lord was so obliged to his pure devotee that he granted it. He says, is there anything else you want? He says, no, that's all. And he left. He came back. And Ramanujacharya said, well, did you ask for your eyes back? He didn't say anything. He said, you go back and you ask. This time it's my instruction. Again he sat before Ranganath. And again he sat down. And this time Ranganath asked him again, what do you want? He said, liberate the minister also, Chaturgram. Chaturgram was the one who arranged for the whole thing to happen. He was envious of Ramanujacharya. The Lord said, okay, he's liberated, whatever you say. The Lord was so obliged to his pure devotee that he'll do anything. This is important to understand. If we want to get the mercy of the Lord, we must get the mercy of the Lord's devotee. When we get the mercy of the Lord's devotee, even if we're so unqualified, by their mercy we become qualified to receive the Lord's mercy. This is so important. The mercy of the pure devotees are the mercy of Krishna directly. And so this went on for some time. Goresh came back and Ramanujacharya again told him to go. And then he said to Ranganath, Koresh said to Ranganath, he said, my dear Lord, I don't want to see anything in this world. I don't want my eyes back. I'm tired of this world. In fact, I don't want to see anything in this world. But if you want to give me eyes, give me that vision where I can only see you and my Guru Maharaj. That's the only vision I want to see, if you want to give me a vision. So the Lord actually blessed him with spiritual vision. And when he came back, Ramanujacharya said, well, you still don't have your eyes back. But he said, my dear Guru Maharaj, I don't need them. I can see you. I can see you clearly. I don't need my eyes. And he described just how Ramanuja was looking. And then Ramanujacharya said, okay, what was Ranganath wearing? How was he dressed? What was his garland? So many things. And he described vividly the beautiful form of the Lord, which he could see with his spiritual vision. The Lord gave him transcendental eyes. And that's all he wanted to see. And Ramanujacharya was so happy. Why was he happy? Because Goresh also said, my dear Lord, please, I'm tired of this world. I want to go back to Vaikuntha. The Lord said, I'll take you back to Vaikuntha. I'll take you back to Vaikuntha. And then Ramanujacharya, when he heard that Goresh was going back to Vaikuntha, he started to dance. He started to sing. Everyone was astonished. Why is Ramanujacharya so happy? He's dancing. And Ramanujacharya revealed why. He said, because Goresh is going back to Godhead, and I am connected with Goresh, I'm his guru, that means anyone who's connected with him also gets the same mercy. Because he's going back to Godhead, therefore I can go back also. That was Ramanujacharya's humility. He didn't think, I'm the guru and I'm, you know, more advanced. He was thinking, the Lord has blessed my... Prabhupada also said that. He said, if one of my students goes back to Godhead, then I can also go back. If I can take one of my disciples back to Godhead, and one of my disciples becomes qualified to go back to Godhead, then I can also return back to Godhead. So this is the mercy of the Lord. This is the mercy. And so, what are the things of this world that are so important? Nothing. We see the beautiful form of Krishna, and then we look at the forms of this world. People are looking at the forms of this world, especially in relationship to the opposite sex. And they think this is so beautiful. But what is the body? When you look at the body, what is it? It's a combination of various ingredients that are not very nice. Right? What's in the body? Blood, pus, urine, bile, air, mucus, stool. So many nice things. And it's all comprised together. And over the top, there's this thin layer of thing called skin, right? Which covers all that mess. And nobody sees really what's underneath. So this little layer of skin, as they say, beauty is only skin deep. But even if you have a scientific mind and you put this body and this skin underneath a microscope, you'll see that in the skin there's all little worms running around. Yeah, there's microscopic worms in the skin that keep the skin fresh. They eat up all of the other bacteria. And the skin stays fresh because of these worms. Isn't that nice? Nice body we have. So many wonderful ingredients. And everyone is looking at each other's body and becoming excited. So we should get excited to see Krishna. Therefore we come, take the darshan of Krishna every day. For Mangal Arati, we should be here. Mangal Arati is so sweet. It's so nice. It's so beautiful. It's called Mangal. Why is it called Mangal? Because it's auspicious. The word Mangal means auspicious. That arti, that worship, which is the most auspicious. So Mangal arti is so nice. If we have this consciousness, when we approach the Lord will reveal more and more about His transcendental nature. About His transcendental beauty. If we simply look at the deity and then just turn our head another way, and then we just, you know, we look at something else. The deity is so nice. Krishna is so beautiful, just to attract our minds and hearts away from the ephemeral beauty of this material world, which is always fading. The beautiful young girl who is so much sought after by everyone, after a few years becomes an old bag. She becomes wrinkled and bones are cracking and crinkling and, you know, she can't speak straight. And, you know, she's, you know, her eyes are half closed. And we should understand what is the nature of the beauty of this. Prabhupada wrote that article called Truth and Beauty. You know that article? The beauty of this world. Would you like to hear the article, the story of Truth and Beauty? It's very instructive. For those of you who are trying to remain serious in Krishna consciousness, if you're serious in Krishna consciousness, this story is a wonderful story. What is the story? There was a prince, and he was very handsome, and also very adventurous. So he was riding throughout his kingdom, and he stopped in one little hermitage, and he knocked on the door, and a beautiful young girl opened the door. Wow, he was attracted by her beauty. He forgot everything. And immediately, he proposed marriage to the girl, being infatuated by her beauty. She was very simple. She was very chaste. She was also very religious. So she didn't really want to get involved with this prince, although he was very qualified. So she didn't know what to do, because he was very forceful, and he was the prince. So she told him, you come back after 1 week and I will accept your proposal. Everybody's listening to this story? This is nice, because this will help you appreciate the beauty of this world. And after some time, he came back, and he was all excited. 1 week, now this beautiful, charming young lady, she will be my wife. He was so happy. So he rode on his horse with great speed to her place. And then he knocked. In the meantime, for during that 1 week, she just took all these purgatives and all these laxatives, and she passed stool and urine and vomit. And she collected it in big buckets. And she stored the buckets in the basement of her house. So after 1 week of, you know, like emptying her body of all this stuff, she was really emaciated. She had sunken eyes and her bones were showing. So when he knocked on the door, she opened the door and he said, excuse me, ma'am, I want to meet this young girl who's living here. I've come to see you. I'm the prince. She said, that's me. He said, no, you can't, that can't be you. I know you're the old lady. You must be the keeper of the house, but where is that young lady who's living here? She said, no, it's actually me. And you're so infatuated by my beauty, I will take you where my beauty is. Please come. So she led him down to the basement with all these beautiful buckets of stool and urine and so many nice other ingredients. And she said, behold my beauty. Just as Krishna told Arjuna, behold the Kurus. Behold my beauty. And then, of course, he was put in his right perspective. So she taught him a lesson that beauty, really, is skin beauty is not really beauty. It's just some illusion created by Maya in order to attract our minds away from Krishna. Prabhupada, in the purports of the Bhagavatam, it explains that this attraction for the opposite sex is the foundation of all material activities and is the foundation of all material suffering. How to get free from that? Become attracted to Krishna. And Krishna is all attractive. Krishna is all attractive. He stands in a three-bowl bending form. He's bent in three places. He's bent at the ankles. He's bent at the waist. He's bent at the neck. He's called Tribhanga Lalitam. His form is bent in three places, which indicates his three beautiful forms. These are all Madhurya, all sweetness. Tribhanga, one of the names of Krishna. So, this is real beauty. The deity is not stone, the deity is not wood, the deity is actually Krishna coming in this transcendental form to attract our minds, attract our hearts, to inspire us in the devotional service to the Lord. As we become more and more absorbed in the transcendental form of the Lord in His service, and then we can lose the attraction for this material world. And Prabhupada says, if you have any attraction for this material world, you have to take birth again. No matter, he says, one pinch of attraction for anything in this world. This world is simply meant to distract us away from Krishna. That's why it's here. But in that distraction, we suffer. In that distracted, we become illusioned. So the Lord is here in His transcendental, beautiful form as Sri Sri Kishore Kishori. And not only is Krishna attractive, but even Radharani, she's more attractive than Krishna because why? She attracts Krishna. Krishna attracts everyone. He's Madan Mohan. He attracts even the person who attracts everyone, Cupid. Cupid attracts everyone, but Krishna is called Madan Mohan, one who attracts Cupid. But Radharani is called Madan Mohan Mohini, the one who attracts, the one who attracts everyone. So, she is the supreme force of all attractiveness. So, devotees in Vrindavan, they say Jai Radhe, they worship Radharani. as topmost. She is the one who is the controller of Vrindavan. She's Vrindavan Aishwari, and she controls Krishna. No one can control Krishna except Radharani, because she has that ingredient that Krishna cannot resist. Pure, unalloyed love in its perfection and in the most perfect way in all aspects of loving exchange. That is Radharani. And so we come every morning to see the beautiful forms of the deities and to take their darshan, to offer our obeisances, offer our prayers, offer our desire to serve them in different ways. Jagannath, Baladev, Lady Subhadra, also very, very beautiful. When Lord Chaitanya saw Lord Jagannath in the temple of Jagannathpur, he fainted. He fainted out of ecstasy, seeing the beautiful form of Lord Jagannath. Jagannath's eyes are so, so wonderful. And when Jagannath sees you're dancing and chanting, his eyes get bigger. His eyes are big, but when he sees your devotion, his eyes increase in size and become bigger and bigger. And Baladev, he is the personification of all what we say, service to Lord Jagannath. His transcendental form is like a beautiful white spring cloud, simply attracting our minds and hearts. So, and Lord Chaitanya is Gaurasunda, Lord Nityananda. We worship Gaur-Nithai. This is our worship of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. Purjendra Nandana Ye Sachi Suta Hoilo Se Balaram Hoilo Nithai. That the same Krishna and Balaram again have come as Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. Simply to engage us in the, what is the most powerful of all spiritual movements or practices, Harinam Sankirtan. This morning we were listening to an announcement given by Sarva Bhaumana. So enthusiastic announcement describing the Harinam Sankirtan that devotees had yesterday. How Lord Chaitanya is attracting all these conditioned souls simply by the power of his mercy in the form of this Harinam Sankirtan. So this is, these are what we say are objects of devotion, are objects of, you know, we say, we keep our mind focused on Krishna. We have to see the forms of this world, but we're not attracted. We're just not attracted. There's nothing in this world that is so attractive. Sometimes people get attracted by nature, how wonderful nature is. But one should see within nature that that element that is attractive is the energy of Krishna. Because it's coming from Krishna, it is all attractive. Okay, I'll stop here. Any questions, comments? Yes, Murari Prabhu? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, actually, Prabhupada's... Yeah, you're right, you got it now. Prabhupada says there's three ways to travel. Three ways to travel. Mantra, yantra, and pigeon. Yantra. Yantra's machine. And mantras by mantra. You can travel by mantra, yeah. What are yogis? Yogis, they can actually fly through the air, some of them, using power, the power of mantra. Yeah. Mantra can make you fly. When Prabhupada came to Dallas Airport one day, he landed and he got off the plane and one reporter came up to him and she said, she was nice. She said, Swamiji, I see you're coming to us. Prabhupada was talking about that. He said, there's three ways to travel. Yantra, mantra, and pigeon. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam that you can train pigeons to carry you. You can fly on pigeons. Yeah, pigeon's a bird. If you know how to train them, they can carry you also. Yeah. It's mentioned, there's a purport. I'll find it for you. It's in the third canto of the Bhagavatam. It says that by training pigeons, one can fly also. you want to try it. But Prabhupada said, mantra, yantra, and pigeon. Then the reporter said, but Swamiji, why did you choose TWA Airlines? And Prabhupada said, to become one with you. And she said, she turned and she looked at the rest of her entourage and said, I like that man. She was happy. She liked Prabhupada. So you can fly through mantra, yes. Mantras you can fly. That's mentioned in the Vedas. I mean, look what Maya Donovan did when the demons and the devotees were demons and the devotees were fighting, the demons and the demigods, demons were being killed. He created, simply by mantra, this, what we say, nectar of immortality through the power of mantra. And he was dipping the demons in this mantra and they were coming back to life. So these are true stories. They're not just some fairy tales. Nowadays we can't do anything. We're just so deficient. Everything is done by machines now. We've substituted everything for machines. But years ago, people had the power of intelligence, the power of mind, the power of body strength. They could do wonderful things that are considered wonderful by today's standard. But nowadays, we can't do anything. This is Kali Yuga. Prayeno ap payesu sabda kalon yuge yasmin janaha manda sumanda matayo manya bhagavat. In this age, all good qualifications are lost. All good quality. This is the age of Kali, right? You see, just look at the quality of life. Years ago, there were so many great saints and so many great people. Is there any great people now? As Kali Yuga goes on, you find in the world anybody is really great anymore? Who's a great person now? And even great saints are becoming less and less available. Kali Yuga takes its toll. Such a bad age. Everything goes down. And so even an ordinary man will be considered great by Kali Yuga standard. Because it just goes down and down and down. So, yes, you can fly. Or you can move objects through mantra. Mantras can move objects. If you know the power of them, how to chant the mantras purely. What was it? Who was it? Someone created a demon by chanting a mantra. From, what was his name? That Muni. Durvasa Muni created a powerful demon. Also another one created a demon to kill Indra. But he chanted the mantra wrong. And he got a demon that was killed by Indra instead of being killed, killing Indra. So chanting mantras are powerful, yeah. The Vedic mantras, but nobody can chant them like they are. Nobody can chant the mantras. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.